No sé lo que pasó. Am I doing enough for my people? Am I doing enough? Am I doing enough para la gente?
Para la gente.
Para mi gente.
Para mi gente.
Para mi gente.
This is Radio Free Aslan, broadcasting from occupied territory.
Voices from the U.S. Social Forum, 2010, is a joint broadcast of the Lhasa Media Press Association.
And Radio Free Aslan.
The Lhasa Press and Media Association is a group of newspapers, organizations, individuals that are committed to Lhasa liberation of the communities of Las Americas.
Radio Free Aslan is a project of the Chicano Development Center, broadcasting from behind enemy lines.
I am your host, Jose G. Moreno, from the Chicano Development Center and Lhasa Media and Press Association. Also joining me is Roberto Reyes from the Chicano Development Center and Francisco Romero from the Lhasa Media and Press Association. In this segment of Radio Free Aslan, we'll be focusing on how activists and organizers of the U.S. Social Forum see today's social and political problems in the U.S. Empire.
My name is Justin Flores with the Farm Labor Organizing Committee, and we're based out of Dudley, North Carolina. We're attending the Social Forum to meet up with other like-minded organizations and really build some solidarity. In our past campaigns, we found that, not one person can do it alone, but when we combine with other organizations and really build this movement, we could really make some inroads and change things on the ground. FLOC is a Farm Labor Organizing Committee. We're a farm workers union. We're started in Northwest Ohio and Southwest Michigan. In the late 90s, we moved down to organize the South, the tobacco fields, and the cucumber fields of North Carolina. Well, that's a very good question. I think it's just misinformation. People have a lack of education. There's too many people out there, too many voices saying things like that, and unfortunately not enough counteracting that in mainstream media. But I think it's, from my point of view, it's pretty clearly wrong. People that are coming here, at least in where I am, are working in the fields, doing work that nobody in this country is doing. And they deserve the same respect and rights as everybody else, and they deserve to be here legally. Currently, we actually have a really big national campaign against tobacco giant R.J. Reynolds. We're trying to bring them to the table because they're the ones that make billions of dollars off of tobacco, and they need to take responsibility for what's going on in the southern tobacco fields. And so we're just pressuring them to come to the table. We're successful in getting one of their board members to resign. And right now, actually tomorrow, we're going to have a big march and start a national boycott. We're going to be organizing people to take their money out of J.P. Morgan Chase in a future date. Because J.P. Morgan Chase is one of the biggest creditors of R.J. Reynolds. And we found if you follow the money, you can find out where the real pressure points are and get some real movement from big companies like R.J. Reynolds. So that's our main campaign right now. Have 20 to 30,000 farm workers working in the Reynolds supply chain that we can really improve things for with a collective bargaining agreement.
David Mitchell. I'm from the North Star Center in Lansing, Michigan. I'm attending because I think it's important to have a feeling for what's going on all over the country as people try to find different responses to problems that are very similar. And so being able to learn from other folks struggling in their locales, I think that's important. As an organization, we are trying to build connections with other radical community spaces and figure out better ways to support each other. Yeah, I think, and I do think there are some workshops around it, but it's less focused on around rural organizing and small town organizing. Around a range of issues, usually employment, but it can go in all different directions. You also have the immigrant struggles in Michigan actually happen in the smaller towns, and a focus on maybe a track on rural organizing or on responses that are not just based on large city models. Obviously, as you go around, you can see that Detroit's hurting. Especially getting out of the city center where most of the forum things are focused and getting into what is actually Detroit, there are gigantic problems. I think the first step to that is looking at any kind of reorganization or trying to focus resources. I think that needs to come from people and can't be about putting in a high rise because condominiums are not the solution.
My name is Rodrigo Rodriguez. I'm here with the Southwest Organizing Project out of Albuquerque, New Mexico. So the larger piece is that the Southwest Organizing Project belongs to Grassroots Global Justice Alliance, who is one of the organizations that's helped sponsoring the event. But the real reason is because we're a social justice movement organization. We're 30 years old and have strong ties, long-standing ties here in the United States and all, internationally as well. The reason that I'm here personally, that I'm most excited about, is to be here to learn about the community gardening efforts that are going on in Detroit. I'm one of the coordinators of a community farming effort in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And the systems that they have here in Detroit are just phenomenal when it comes to the community gardening. They have something like 850 plus gardens here in Detroit, and I'm really excited to come and learn about that. So, like I said, SWAP is a social justice organization, and our mission is to empower the disenfranchised communities of the Southwest to realize gender and racial equality and social and economic justice. We do work with young people. We do a lot of civic engagement work. We do the community gardening work. We work with immigrant communities. We do media justice work as well. You know, a little bit of everything. Me personally, I work with the community gardening effort, which is designed to not just be a garden. You know, I think that when you start talking about gardening, people are like, oh yeah, that's cool. But what we're really trying to see gardening through a different lens and try to view it more of as an engagement tool and as a tool for organizing, something to build around, to build community or in that positive space that is the community garden. So I'm originally from Denver. Denver is an old, it was an industrialized city as well. It was a railroad city. I'm really actually surprised to see how empty Detroit is. You know, it's a massive city, and it's a strange feeling to be on the streets at night and there's hardly anybody out. You know, I haven't seen a lot of community here around the downtown area where the Forum is based. I see a lot of Forum people. I see a lot of conscious folks who have come from other parts of the country, but you don't see a lot of local Detroit residents. But I mean, it's an amazing experience. I was really involved with the first U.S. Social Forum that happened in Atlanta. I got to work with the National Planning Committee for about a month before the forum. So this time I got to come as a participant. I've gotten to go to a lot of workshops. I've got to see the plenaries. I've got to really experience the forum in a way that I didn't get to the last time. So I'm really excited about that. Another piece is that we came with a contingent called the People's Freedom Caravan that started off in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and San Antonio, Texas, in Atlanta, and in Jackson, Mississippi. And each group started off in their respective locations and met up at different points along the way. So we personally in Albuquerque, our journey included a stop in Ponca City, Oklahoma, to learn about the environmental degradation and environmental racism that's going on tribal lands. We went to St. Louis, Missouri. We went to Louisville, Kentucky, Chicago, Illinois, Toledo, Ohio, and then ultimately ended up here in Detroit, carrying those stories and building those relationships along the way to bring here to Detroit.
My name is Daniel Langlevitsky. I work with the Rude Mechanical Orchestra out of New York City. So the RMO, who I dance with, is a 60-member, usually 30-piece at a large gig, radical brass band. We play music in support of social justice movements in New York City and beyond. So we came out here both as a part of our process of political education within the band to attend workshops on the struggles that we're involved in, both as a solidarity musical project and in our own organizing and activist work, and also to play for folks here along with Cackalack Thunder and members of the Brass Liberation Orchestra, who are parallel projects to us in North Carolina and in Bay Area in California. So it's a mixture. It's a mixture for us of doing what we do, which is play music to provide energy, provide hopefully some inspiration, bring some joy to the movements that we work with and that we play to support, and also to learn from folks who are involved in the struggles, both ones that we're directly involved in New York and elsewhere in the country and around the world. Absolutely, It's been very interesting coming from a city that hasn't been experiencing the kind of slow motion hurricane that's happened here to come and see some of the solutions that folks have been finding here over the last many decades, and also to get to meet organizers working here whose works inspired us. I mean, I just came this morning from a panel with Grace Lee Boggs, who's someone whose name and whose work has been a strong influence on me and on other folks in the band. But really just seeing the texture of life and the texture of struggle in this city has been both inspiring and exciting, and also a strong warning about how we need to start doing work in the places that we're from, and for us that's New York, to think about the cities that we want to live in and the lives that we want to be living over the next decades. So the Rude Mechanical Orchestra is a solidarity project as its mission, as the core of what we do and all that we do. So we exist exclusively to play for demonstrations, picket lines, benefit parties. We don't take gigs that aren't politically engaged, and we think about the politics of both of the event and of the organizations involved in it when we're deciding whether or not we should take on a gig. So it's, for us, we're not, some of us in the band are professional musicians, but this project isn't something that any of us are making a living on. It's our service to the movements, both organizations that we're involved in other ways, and to organizations that we want to stand in solidarity with. So we've done a range of things. Most of our gigs come to us because organizations are interested in using us for something and feel like we have something that we can contribute to an event that they're planning, whether that's as a dance band at a benefit party, or whether that's waking up bosses early in the morning in their houses so that they know they can't hide from their workers, or whether that's playing a street demonstration with the Palestine Solidarity Organization. But we've also, over the past year and a half especially, started deliberately seeking out gigs through the Right to the City Alliance in particular, because we decided that that was where we wanted to prioritize our efforts in New York City at this moment in time, is with the efforts around gentrification and displacement and access to housing that the Right to the City organizations are focused on. And that's partly because some of us in the band, including myself, are involved in organizations that are part of Right to the City Alliance in New York, and also through our political analysis of what brings together so many of the different issues that we're concerned with in our city in this particular political and social moment.
Luis Judith, de la Coalición de Derechos Humanos, Tucson, Arizona. El día de hoy estamos más que todo sobre la militación en nuestra frontera. Estamos viendo sobre las problemáticas de la ley, la SB 1070, todo lo que está pasando en las problemáticas sobre las inmigración, que está pasando, el racismo que se está viviendo, dividiendo a las familias, el Sheriff Joe Arpaio haciendo de las suyas en la comunidad de Arizona, dividiendo a las familias. Pero más que todo estamos sobre las muertes en el desierto también. Más que todo es algo de lo que se está viviendo desde 1994, que estamos diciendo se viene esto y no habían puesto atención a la gente hasta ahora, que tantas propuestas como la propuesta la 200, la 200, la 100, la 300 y ahora la SB 1070 es cosas que realmente nos está afectando todo. El racismo se está realmente descarado en el estado de Arizona. Sí, ha habido muchos ataques, amenazas, no nomás al grupo de la Coalición de Derechos Humanos, sino a todas las organizaciones que realmente están con los derechos civiles, e incluso a Raúl Rijalva, congresista, junto con la gente de él y a la gente de nosotros, nos hicieron amenazas de muerte, y más que todo a Raúl y a Isabel García. De las marchas que vivimos el día 1 de mayo, más que todo, es que estamos en contra de la ley SB 1070 y todas las cosas antimigrantes. El día 27 de mayo también hicimos otra en Phoenix y se hizo otro movimiento muy grande, de las marchas más grandes que ha habido en el país, sobre el movimiento en contra de todas estas leyes antimigrantes. Vamos a estar siguiendo trabajando duro todos los días porque esto no para, porque el 27, 29 de julio entra la ley, pero nosotros estamos luchando para que obviamente el Congreso y el presidente señor Obama que escuche sobre todas estas leyes antimigrantes, obviamente para demandarla y que se respeten los derechos civiles. Entonces no vamos a quitar del dedo renglón, seguimos luchando todos los días obviamente hasta llevar a la corte esta ley, la SB-70, y obviamente lograr una reforma migratoria y pedir un alto a la militación en la frontera.
My name is Yaya Raiz. I work with Panleft Productions in Tucson, Arizona, and I also work with Free Radio Shukshon. I'm here this year because I was very excited that it was being held in Detroit. I think that Detroit is the ideal place, being that it's going through a lot of economic changes as well as, I will say, revolutionary changes. And I think it's important for all of us that have converged here from around the US to be able to learn from the movements that are emerging and have been here for a long time. Yeah, I think I really, really like Detroit. I really love sharing ideas with the people from Detroit, learning about the struggles and the movement that they have going here. And I also have really enjoyed being here for the AMC conference and for the U.S. Social Forum 2010, because there's people from all over that have so much to share, and there's a lot to learn, it feels like. And I also believe that more and more, the more and more that we have these types of gatherings, we learn that our struggle is very similar and that we're pretty much all working towards the same goal, and that's pretty inspiring. I think that the ways in which all of us can really be able to support movement in the United States is really by recognizing our own privilege as maybe as straight people, as people with documents, as males, as people with white skin. All of those things I think are really important in order for so many breakdowns to happen so that we can get to the root of what we need to do. And that's really to listen to the voices of indigenous people, the voices of people who have been here from before us, and to listen to our elders, to learn from them, to listen to the children, and more importantly, or not as importantly, but also as important, is to listen to the earth. I've actually been thinking about, in my own mind, being that I live in Tucson, which is 45 minutes from Nogales, Sonora, Nogales, Mexico, and what we see every day is Border Patrol, we see ICE, we are on the daily, weekly experiencing raids, and on April 15th, we had 800 ICE agents pretty much come and really create a lot of fear and chaos in our communities, and also there was raids, so they were raiding a variety of shuttle businesses in Nogales, Phoenix, and Tucson, and they also actually picked up people who were taking their kids to school and pretty much deported people. And so that's the reality of everyday people are afraid to leave their homes. There's so much, you know, brutality by the Border Patrol, by the police, and so I believe that for me being here, it's really interesting to see that there is not that militarization here. I don't see Border Patrol driving around like they own the place, and so that's really different, and that also, you know, makes me really think about the fact that we need to have the conversation around race and continue to have that conversation, to push that conversation. But I also have talked to a few people who live here, and they say that in the Southwest, which is a bit ironic, the community that is mainly Latino descendant, they are also experiencing fear that, you know, the Border Patrol also descends on their communities and also immigration. And so I believe that the issue and the things that are happening in Arizona are not unique to Arizona. I think that it's the placement of geographically, I think has a lot to do with the blunt attacks. I think there's a lot of things that kind of converge to make it that way. So really, to answer your question, the reality that I have seen here in Detroit in the, you know, in the week and a half that I've been here versus what you see in Tucson the first hour you're there is vastly different. Well, I'm actually going to be going tonight for the first time to Southwest, and I'm really excited. And so I can answer that question maybe better, you know, once I'm there. But I guess what I can say to that is that Tucson, Arizona is, there's a lot of brown people. There's a lot of indigenous people that have, you know, been there and continue to be there. And they're also protesting as to why they're not able to cross, you know, their own lands, to migrate in their own lands as they've, you know, been used to, which is a struggle that we have, as migrants who are descendants of, you know, Spaniards and indigenous folks.
And I represent Mexican-American Raza Studies alumni. Our current struggle in Tucson right now is recently there's a bill that got passed, which is HB 2281, which bans all ethnic studies being in next ethnic study class in my high school back in 2008. And I felt it was my responsibility to fight for these classes and maintain these classes. So that's what currently our struggle is to maintain ethnic studies in Arizona. But mainly for this bill, it's actually targeting just one specific program, which is Mexican-American Raza Studies, which is basically Chicano studies. It's Chicano literature, Chicano history, and a social justice government class. So it's we're actually the biggest Mexican American studies program in the nation, being K-12 program. So we serve elementary, middle school, and high school in a public school setting. So it's been a struggle, you know, maintaining it. And this is actually the third bill that they put out there, and it got passed. Right now, we are filing a lawsuit against this. So that's our right now what we're doing. We have to fundraise about $250,000. So it's we're doing a lot of fundraising, a lot of trying to networking type of things. I think because we do live in a Republican state, and they see that a lot of brown students being conscious, being aware of their surroundings and taking action in the things that they think it's unjust and unfair, I think they feel threatened in this xenophobia thing that they have going on too. So it's like, I think that in fear of the unknown or the browning of America type of thing, and just being so afraid, I think that's why they take this type of action. And I attended some workshops, and also I did a couple panels with Pan Left from Tucson, which is videoing the struggles in the student movement and the young movement in Arizona, so in Tucson and Phoenix.
This monthly podcast is brought to you by the Chicano Development Center, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to education and political empowerment through grassroots coalition building. We believe in the indigenous sovereignty of the Chicano people in the United States, and that true social and political change begins with the people. Our style of low-intensity organizing endeavors to build intentional communities within greater communities. The motivating force behind low-intensity organizing is to constantly challenge the status quo as to the treatment and economic status, not only of Chicanos and other indigenous people, but of all oppressed people. At the Chicano Development Center, we believe that resistance begins with education, organization, and preparation. We believe that Raza must take action on a regular basis, not just in times of crisis.
SJs, what we love the best.